You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. There's been a growing awareness of the gender gap for women in leadership roles in companies across the country lately, and researchers at the consulting firm Bain & Company wanted to find out why.
According to a recent survey the company conducted, women are more ambitious than men to hold a leadership role in a company early on in their careers, but that ambition apparently plummets like about 60% after just a few years.
The survey tried to find out why women were turned off by leadership roles and what businesses could do in order to support and encourage their female employees. We're joined now by Julie Coffin, partner for Bain & Company and the chair of the company's Global Women's Leadership Council. Julie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. Hello.
Well, Julie, according to the study, what happens to women's ambition to make it to top leadership over time?
Well, it's exactly as Rob said. It plummets after just a few years, down 60%. And what the research was trying to understand were some of the drivers behind that, because, again, it started out equal or ahead of that of men. And along with aspirations, confidence that they could achieve those top jobs also dropped substantially in those first few years of employment.
And you say that initially in the classroom, women are ambitious. At the beginning of that first employment at a company, they are ambitious. But something happens over those first few years. What do we know about what might be going on there?
Yeah, what we did is tried to look at the groups separately, those that still had high aspirations after those first few years versus those where those aspirations had dropped, and tried to say what's different about those groups, what has changed. And we saw three primary drivers that we believe is behind this drop in aspirations. Number one, those that no longer aspired for top jobs were having a very hard time envisioning a path to get to the top. They either didn't see that there were people like them around the top of the company, or that their style wasn't as valued at the top of the company. The second thing that was cited was they didn't seem to believe that their day-to-day manager truly supported them or encouraged them to try and reach for the next level or to push themselves in new directions. And the third element was all around role models in terms of whether or not they believed that there were people that they could not only look up to and see a path to get there, that was the first category, but also just saw people that they wanted to be like and that inspired them to try and reach the top of the company. So for those folks with the drop in aspirations, we think those elements were the key drivers there, which has a lot more to do with the day-to-day experience for women on the job than necessarily the policies or programs that are in place at the corporate level.
So what happens to men during those same years?
It's a good question. And what we saw was that the men had very little drop in aspiration comparatively, and in particular seemed to feel very supported by their supervisors. And that was the biggest gap that we could see across the genders. And we thought about that a little bit and realized that 80 to 90% of the bosses, if you will, are still male out there, just given the disparity we see in people in managerial roles. And so the one-on-one dialogue that you really need from a manager to an employee to build that relationship, maybe get that one-on-one coaching, get some encouragement and some belief that you're going to support that employee to reach the next goal. Those one-on-one relationships weren't forming as readily with a male boss and a female supervisee, if you will. It wasn't as natural necessarily to find those times to connect outside the workplace or even inside the workplace. A lot of what we found was that men might have been more uncomfortable having some of those kinds of conversations with their women subordinates than they might have been with their male counterparts.
Right. So does that seem to indicate to you that women need a different kind of relationship with those managers, those supervisors, than men do?
I think what I'd say is that they need, probably both men and women need the similar relationship in terms of feeling supported and feeling that they can go to their boss with challenges, opportunities, and coaching requirements, but that the women are finding the lack of that particularly damning at this point in their career. So it's access to those kinds of relationships and the approaches or the tools to build those relationships that seem to be missing for the women as much. And the guys, I think, tend to take it a bit for granted. And so my belief, just talking to my own colleagues, is that both men and women need that encouragement and supportive supervisor. It just seems to happen more naturally for men, and the absence of it is having a huge impact on women and on their desire to keep moving up and to feel like there's a path for them into leadership roles.
Well, part of that sounds like a catch-22, doesn't it? If you're saying that male supervisors are less likely to connect with women employees outside of work, maybe uncomfortable with them, and women need that sort of relationship with their supervisor, and there aren't as many women supervisors. So how do they get it then?
Yeah, no, I think you hit on a really important point, which is, you know, on the one hand, if we don't do something, we don't make some sort of intervention here, we're going to end up in that doom loop you just described. And so part of it, I think, has to do with training and acclimating managers, but be they male or female, as to what does it take to build the sort of relationship with your the people you're supervising that nurtures their aspirations, male or female, and trying to help people get past what might be initially awkward or uncomfortable moments. So giving some more training or support on how to make those connections, how to reach out and sort of offer encouragement, asking questions, for example, instead of just giving directives, I think can build a more open relationship and they can share perspectives more easily. At the same time, I think that the women themselves have to recognize that they have to be proactive in seeking out actual coaching, support, and advice from their bosses and not wait for it to be handed to them on a silver platter. So both sides might need to think a little bit more strategically about how to build those connections, because the absence of those relationships seems to really be hurting women's ability to continue to climb the corporate ladder.
Now, looking again at the causes of the effect here, one interesting thing in the survey is that marriage and motherhood, having kids, didn't seem to have a place here in the reason why a woman wouldn't pursue an upper-level management position. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, we were definitely surprised, and I guess I want to be careful on how I phrase it, because what we'd say is if you look at the two cohorts, those that still aspired after 3 or more years in the job and those that did not for top roles, and then you ask yourself, is there a difference between the percentage of those women that had kids or did not? There was no difference across the groups. So what our conclusion was that it was not a primary driver. It wasn't as if everyone that used to have high aspirations went away, had kids, and now no longer had those same aspirations. But instead, that in and of itself didn't explain the lack of aspirations. I want to be clear, though, clearly having children and having families adds additional complexity and complications to both men and women, frankly, that are sharing in parental roles. So what we would say is that in and of itself is certainly not the killer of aspirations that oftentimes it's painted to be. And therefore, while it's an important consideration in terms of what are the needs of employees that are balancing work and family issues, it is not the driving factor here. Beyond what the supervisory role is, the other point that I would just also make is that this idea of envisioning success and being able to figure out if you fit into what is rewarded at your company, if you fit what we call the ideal worker stereotype or not, or whether or not companies have done a better job of saying there's not just one model of success, but there's multiple models, can also help women feel like they don't have to fit into an archetype that they may not be comfortable with.
We're talking right now with Julie Kaufman about a recent study that shows how many companies drain women's ambitions. After a few years on the job, they're not as ambitious, not as likely to go for those upper-level jobs anymore. And Julie, we're talking about some aspects of this, including you mentioned the ideal employee issue and maybe a stereotype that the ideal employee works 60 hours a week, they're available 24/7, and it sounds like some women are looking at that and saying, I don't want to do that. I can't be that. What did you find
there? That's right. Yeah, and I think it's really critical to think about the way in which companies, whether they realize it or not, but the people that they showcase as the top performers, the people that get the promotions, or the people that are celebrated at big end-of-year meetings, if they all fit a similar pattern, if they look the same, if they sound the same, and if the way in which their accomplishments are described make it sound like they'll run through walls to get that next sale or do whatever it takes to close a deal, at some level you're not necessarily motivating everybody else that says, gosh, I'm not sure I can ever be that person. Is there a way in which I can still give my all to my assignments, to my customers, do a great job, but still be able to manage other aspects of my life? And where are the folks like that that are celebrated? And if people start to get the impression that the people that are at the top of the company are superhuman in some way, it's gonna eventually turn them off to believe they can fit in. And I think it's an important element for companies to really look at who they celebrate, what they reward, how their bosses talk about their own personal lives and trade-offs, and whether or not they're creating an atmosphere where there's a variety of models that can make it, or creating an atmosphere that if you don't fit this one model, you might have to go somewhere else.
And living up to that model of the ideal employee, does that disenchant more women than it does men?
It seems like for, and our research would show that it does, and that part of that might go back to the fact that the very numbers describe that there are more men than women at these senior roles to begin with. So as it is, women may not feel like they, quote, fit in from a pure demographic standpoint. And then when you overlay some of those attitudes or some of those impressions of how much you have to be always on or working 24/7, that seems to add to the fact that women would say, gosh, I'm just not sure I ever can be or want to be that person. Well, I would also say, though, that I think as more and more men, especially our younger generations that we see that we're hiring now, the millennials as they're called, and more folks are sharing parental responsibilities more in a partnership manner, that I think that there's plenty of men out there that also would chafe at that stereotype, so to speak, or not want to be in that role, and figuring out a way that we can make it possible for people to see leaders in a light that they're people that they want to become and see role models or aspects of their behavior that are more accessible, that'll help both men and women in this quest to proceed in their careers.
We're talking right now with Julie Kaufman from Bain & Company about a recent study they did that shows that some companies are draining women's ambition and gives advice on how companies can keep their employees engaged.
And we want to hear from you. Does your workplace encourage you to advance, to maybe enter the world of management? Have you had a supervisor who was particularly good or bad at that kind of encouragement? Does this play out differently the same way for men and women where you work? Have you worked at a company for a few years and feeling, wow, I could never do that. I could never become a manager. I don't see a path from here to there. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Right now, here's a few headlines we're keeping an eye on with Kristen Durst from WPR News.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now to Julie Kaufman about what companies can do to encourage more women to go after leadership roles. And we want to hear from you on this. Have you felt less inclination to hold a top position at a company after working there for a while? What made you feel that way? And are you a manager that works with and tries to encourage women to go after those higher roles? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Julie, for companies that are having this goal of keeping women engaged, having women in leadership roles, what is the benefit to the company?
Well, there's, I think, several different benefits, and we at Bain have been absolutely embracing the opportunity to try and do this for ourselves because we think that there's two or three things that are most that really the outcomes are. Number one, we think that having a more diverse talent pool tends to lead to better outcomes. There's more creativity and thought. There's more innovation and problem solving. There tends to be a lot of different perspectives that can be brought to situations that's beneficial. The second thing is a pure numbers thing, which is, look, more than 55% of university graduates are women in the developed world these days. And the talent pool, therefore, has got a lot of women in it. And if by the time you get to management or senior level roles, you're seeing only 20% or less are still female, that means that you're losing an awful lot of talent on the way, and that re-recruiting and retraining is awfully expensive. And finally, I just believe that the customers out there, more and more purchasing power, if you will, in many industries is concentrated in the hands of women, whether it's healthcare, whether it's consumer products, whether it's retail. The list goes on, and with more diversity in terms of the ability to think through the products, the innovations, the service experience that those customers and clients want, we think that it's going to lead to a better understanding of the customer needs, and your company will be better able to respond to those needs and opportunities.
Are companies that do have better gender equity seeing those results already?
There are. You know, there's a lot of different research out there that demonstrate that share prices, if you look at publicly traded companies with at least three board members that are women as opposed to less than three, you could see a demonstrable difference in the overall market capitalization and the current share price of those publicly traded companies. We've also seen in our own research that when you have companies with better gender representation as well as a belief that there's more equal opportunity, both policies as well as programs to help promote flexible working, et cetera, that you have more engaged employees. People are more happy and willing to recommend the company, and that tends to lead to higher growth for those companies. So we've seen that there are benefits around employee engagement, around growth rates, and around overall valuations of publicly traded companies.
Let's go to our phone lines now. We've got Carla with us from Stevens Point. Hi, Carla.
Hi. I just have a comment on this issue. As a person who's 67 years old, I've been a wife and mother and gone through the whole bit, and I've been working since, I hate to think how long, probably, 40 years? I'm not retired yet, and I have noticed as the years have gone by that I have less and less respect for leadership. There's poor leadership in a lot of companies. I work in the healthcare industry. I'm disgusted by leadership. Why would I want to be part of that? And I do contract work now, temporary positions, because of that disgust. At least I can go in, assess a situation, do something, and feel pretty good about myself.
So, Carla, I want to make sure I got you. Yeah. Are you saying that lack of leadership at the top affects the way women function in the workplace?
Yes, lack of integrity in the leadership, lack of true leadership. People, I think, nowadays are just sucking up for the next little immediate benefit they can get at the very top levels.
All right. Thank you so much, Carla. I want to make sure we can get Julie in on this. And Julie, I don't know, is there a problem there that in some cases people at the top in these leadership roles need to clean house and make sure that they're putting their best foot forward?
Well, I think, there's a couple of interesting things in what Carla just said. One is whether or not if she believes that the lack of integrity of leadership is making a lot of women like herself just not aspire for those jobs because she doesn't feel like they're worth aspiring to. It's, I think, an important point. And the other one is, she mentioned she's doing contract work now. We have looked at and noticed that the rate of women, that they may leave bigger companies, but there's a high level of entrepreneurship. So a lot of women-owned businesses or smaller organizations where they can have more flexibility as well as be involved in the leadership of the companies. And so I think there might be a bit of a trend. Our research didn't go this far to prove it, but that many of those women where the aspirations for top jobs in bigger companies might have waned decided to go and do something else on a smaller scale or on their own where they could be in more control of what is valued, what is rewarded at a different environment. So I think there's something to that in terms of seeing high levels of entrepreneurship and consultancy type work by women in the workplace these days.
Carla, thanks a lot for that call. And we're going to go next to Marcia in Appleton. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
Well, I'm kind of on the same page as Carla. I actually left my last employer because of the management, which was a female. And I am a master's level professional. And I will say for kind of a broad base in an academic setting, what I noticed was there was a lack of support for child care, for family issues, for health concerns, for having a flexible schedule. There seemed to be a great deal of their interest in moving up, but that had a direct negative impact on our staff, and definitely a lack of collaboration, which I think is a key leadership style no matter where you work. And over a period of time, it just became important for me to move on so that I could find the work environment that best met my skill set.
Okay, Marcia, just really quickly before I let you go, are you saying that because it was women in these roles that you think there's something going on with women in leadership in general, or is this true maybe of men in leadership roles that you've worked with too?
I would have to say women in leadership. I think it is a role that is fairly new to some different realms or some different academic settings, perhaps, other settings, but their skill sets did not match what their employees needed.
Marcia, thank you so much for your thoughts. And Julie, is there something there, Marcia, pointing to women leaders who did not promote the most flexible or family-friendly policies? As we wrap up, what would you say to that?
Well, I think there's certainly some comments that's been out there for a long time saying, are women leaders doing enough for the women coming behind them, right? And that we have the pioneers that sort of made it through on their own done enough to break that glass ceiling for everybody else. And to me, it's a little bit individual by individual. It's hard to overgeneralize into all women leaders or all male leaders. What I do believe is that, in general, the programs and policies are an important starting position. And foundationally, companies need to have those sorts of flexible policies and mindsets. However, a lot of what our research was about was saying what happens day to day, every day, working with that direct supervisor, and how can those relationships be enhanced to try and help people not lose those aspirations too early on in their careers.
Yeah, we leave it there. Julie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That was Julie Coffin, a partner at Bain & Company, talking about what organizations can do to close the gender gap among leadership positions.